Good morning. It's good to see everybody out. I still want to put that thing on every single Sunday, and I don't have to, but that's what I want to do. Again, welcome everyone out this morning. I sure wasn't prepared for when Janie texted me Thursday night to let me know about Ardell. Ardell means a whole lot to me and to my family. He's sort of I think we all have like those tentpole type people in our lives that kind of keep you up no matter what. I know that I could have called Ardell. I don't even know. I can't even imagine something that I couldn't call him and say, hey, I need this, and that he wouldn't have figured out a way to supply that. And so I say he did that for me. I know that he did that for lots and lots of other people. And so this world, I think, grows a bit dimmer when we lose people like Ardell Porter, and I'm gonna miss him a lot. So welcome again, everyone, this morning. There's a story that goes that when Abraham Lincoln was running for president back in 1860, that he got a letter from a little 11-year-old girl who some say helped get him elected. The little girl urged him to grow a beard because she believed that the homeliness of his face was hurting his chances to become the president of the United States. Maybe to Lincoln's credit, he was not offended. He answered her letter personally and thanked her for the suggestion, further adding that maybe he would like to visit her should his campaign stop near her area. And then Abraham Lincoln set out to grow a beard. It happened that one day on the campaign trail, Lincoln's train was scheduled to pass through the town that the little girl lived in, and practically everybody had assembled at the train station. There were the leading people of the Republican Party there, all wearing their top hats, a marching band. The townsfolk were all there in their Sunday finest. Nearly everyone was there except for that little girl. Her father had left her at home, telling her that Lincoln would really only be interested in hearing the politicians and their speeches, the votes and the voters, not the attentions of a little girl. That's not what he would be looking for. It just so happened, though, that as the campaign train was getting close to town, it broke down and it was forced to stop for repairs. And not wanting to just sit around on a train all day, Abraham Lincoln set off across the field in search of this little girl's house. And when he knocked on the door and introduced himself, the maid was nearly speechless. But the little girl, who had a little friend over at the time, welcomed in Abraham Lincoln as if they were expecting him. And they pretended to have a tea party, drinking pretend hot chocolate out of their little teacups that they had invited Lincoln to join with them. And after a while, Abraham Lincoln said he probably should be get going, and he thanked them for the party and asked how they liked his new beard. And then he left to go back to the train. And the train started on its way, and it went right through that town without ever stopping, right past all of those dignitaries and politicians and marching band and people in their Sunday best, all because Lincoln had come to visit and to say thank you to a little girl. A beard made a difference. Well, as Wes read today, that Psalm 133, it says, "Behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. It is like the precious oil on the head, running down the beard on the beard of Aaron, running down on the collar of his robes. It is like the dew of Hermon, which falls on the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord has commanded the blessing, life forevermore." And what sort of catches your attention about that psalm is that it's the emphasis is on unity. It's one of the very first things that it says in this psalm. But as you read that, it says that unity is like the precious oil running down the beard of Aaron, and that's sort of a weird way of putting it, right? What does oil running down the beard of Aaron have to do with the unity of God's people? And maybe you've thought the same way. I've sort of thought when you anoint with oil, maybe you just use a small amount and you apply it directly to the affected area that you're wanting to anoint with oil. But here, this image is something of a large quantity running down Aaron's head to his beard and onto his robes. And you wonder that's probably not good for Aaron's wife if he had one, right? That's not going to come out too easy in the wash. But God thought that there was something here that we needed to see. But before we get necessarily to that, let's just keep in mind that this psalm is about unity, about how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. Unity among God's people is one of the most highly sought prizes by God. In fact, it's one of the last things that Jesus prays for before his crucifixion. Jesus would say that they may be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I in them, and you in me, that they may become perfectly one, so that the world may know that you sent me, and love them even as you loved me. And then years later, Paul would write to the church in Ephesus in Ephesians 4, beginning in verse 1, he would say that I urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the one hope that belongs to your call. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. God saved us to be one people, filled with one Spirit, having one hope and one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. That's why he saved us. This unity thing is so highly prized by God that the writer of Proverbs would say that God hates those who sow discord among brothers. In other words, don't say mean things. Don't do nasty things to other Christians. Don't do that. Don't go there. God doesn't like that. That's one of the things that angers God. The church in Corinth had this problem. The Christians there had gotten to the point where they treated each other really bad, really worse than dirt. And even during worship time, this was happening. And then they would have the audacity then to take communion. And Paul told them that made God furious. He told them that they were guilty concerning the body and the blood of the Lord. He said, let a person examine himself then, and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment on himself. And then in verse 30, he says, that is why many of you are weak and ill, and some have died. Their behavior seemingly so angered God that God punished them with illness, even to death. God took their behavior towards each other personally. That Christian that we sit next to is also made in the image of God. And Jesus died so that you and that they could be saved. And so when we mistreat each other and maybe call each other names, it makes God mad because we're insulting someone that Christ died to save. And it doesn't really matter for our justifications. We just shouldn't go down that road. So where does this beard thing fit in? Well, if we look at it again, that unity among brothers is like the precious oil on the head running down the beard, on the beard of Aaron, running down on the collar of his robes. Aaron was the the first high priest of Israel. And he stood in the very presence of God and gave offerings that were sweet and a pleasant smell before the Lord. He was God's high priest, and he represented God to the people. I would think that he would be a hard person to miss. I think then you would know exactly who Aaron was when you saw him. Maybe he had some sort of unique robe that no one else dressed quite like the high priest. I don't think anyone quite smelled like him either. Well, when he was anointed with oil, it poured down his head through the sides of his face and soaked into his beard. This oil had a good and powerful aroma to it. And when Aaron was around, the scent would literally fill the room. And that's sort of true for us too, as Christians. Paul tells us that we too have a smell. And in 2 Corinthians 2, beginning in verse 15, Paul says that we are the aroma of Christ to God among those who are being saved and among those who are perishing, to one a fragrance from death to death, to the other a fragrance from life to life. In the same way, unity has an aroma about it. The oil which anointed Aaron's beard got into everything. It literally covered him with the smell of God. And that's true too for us. When we love each other, we have a smell about us too. It's sort of like that little girl who said what love is. She said that love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on cologne and they go out and sniff each other. Well, maybe that's true. As Christians, when we love each other, there's a smell about us too. John 11:35, Jesus says, "By this people will know that you are my disciples, if that you have love for one another." When we love one another, when we're in unity, the world can smell us. Several years ago, psychologists from some Big Ten schools, Purdue University, Ohio State, and Indiana University, did a study on college students to discover how those students viewed the character of people who made positive and negative comments about others among them. And what they discovered was something that they called spontaneous trait transference. And what that said was to say if a politician accused their opponents of being dishonest, those students generally viewed the person who made those comments as being the one who was dishonest. And when someone was a gossiper about the immorality of someone else, they seen the person who was gossiping as more immoral. And by contrast, the opposite was true. If an art critic praised an artist as being talented, the students generally viewed that critic as also being talented. Whatever trait a person accused someone else of having, that trait was then transferred to them by those who heard them speaking. I hope I didn't just walk in a big circle. But apparently this is something that's quite common. In some ways, people can smell how we treat other people. And if we're mean to other people, the world can smell meanness as well. But if we love one another, I think like Paul says, the world smells Jesus. There's one more verse here to Psalms 133. It says the unity among brothers is like the dew of that's Mount Hermon, which falls on the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord has commanded the blessing, life forevermore. And Mount Hermon is in the northern part of Israel. It's the highest mountain in Israel. And there ice and dew gathers on that mountain, and it eventually seeps down from the headwaters that form the Jordan River. And so without Mount Hermon, there would be no Jordan River. And without no Jordan River, there would be hardly any water to the area of Palestine. And it would just be basically a desert. Without Mount Hermon, the whole area would be cursed with death. But the waters there gather on that mountain, and they seep down to the Jordan River, giving life and blessing to the promised land. Psalm 133 is saying that unity is the water that gives God's people life. Our love for one another is what makes the church sparkle and grow. It's how we treat each other can bring life, or it can bring death to a church. As we finish up, about 10 years ago, CNN did a program on some research on the effect of compliments and criticisms in various businesses. And the researchers found that when a boss used 3 negative comments for every 1 positive one, that business struggled. Contrast that when the boss used 6 times as many positive comments for every 1 negative comment, that business thrived. The same was true in that study for marriages. When spouses maintained that ratio of positive and negative, 6 to 1, to each other, they generally saw their marriages as being happy. What's that say to us in the church? I think it says that if you and I want to be successful, that we need to focus on saying good things to and about each other. 6 times, maybe, even more good things than any criticism. If there's someone out there that annoys you, and there is, right? There is someone out there who annoys you. Start doing that. Compliment them 6 times for every 1 negative comment, and I think you'll turn their life around, maybe yours as well. Final thought as we finish up. Mount Hermon's the highest point in Israel. The water there again gives the promised land life from high up there in the mountains. In the same way, the unity that gives life to the church, it comes from high as well. Our unity comes from God. John would say in 1 John 4:19 that we love because he first loved us. When we love each other and compliment each other, we ought to show that we've learned what love is like, or loving others because of how God has loved us. A lot of times I think a lot of people think about Christianity sometimes it's just being this list of do's and don'ts. And there are some do's and don'ts in the Bible, but really that's not the things that Jesus focused on. He focused on things like a new commandment. And that new commandment that he gave us, he said, I give to you a new commandment that you love one another just as I have loved you. You are to also love one another. That's the commandment that Jesus said we should focus on, because it is good and it is pleasant when brothers dwell in unity. Maybe this morning, though, you're outside of Christ and you've decided that you're going to put Christ on in baptism. You've came to that point in your faith that you're ready to put Christ on in baptism. The baptismal waters are ready. You may be a Christian and need prayers from the church, and you would like that to be publicly known. If that's the case, whatever the case may be, if you need to come, please come as together we stand and we sing.